all forms in the universe appear at once. This is Buddhist Books Podcast, part 282, and so it's Zen Buddhism, part 11, in which we'll be reading the Platform Sutra, picking up where we left off in part 8, or part 9, rather. So, odd-numbered Zen episodes, we read the Platform Sutra. Even-numbered, we read Shobogenzo. I'll find a better way to organize all that. Anyway, if you would like to start at the beginning of the Zen Buddhism series here on Buddhist Books Podcast, you can do so by clicking right there. All right. I hope everybody's doing well. And, yeah. Without further ado, I will get to today's reading. 11. So we finished 10 last time. So 11. Quote. Oh, okay, so he's still talking. He's still dictating this story. After about 2 months, I reached Ta Yu Ling. Unknown to me, several hundred men were following behind, wishing to try to kill me and steal my robe and dharma. By the time I had gone halfway up the mountain, they had all turned back. But there was one monk of the family name of Chen, whose personal name was Hui Ming. Formerly, he had been a general of the third rank, and he was by nature and conduct coarse and violent. Reaching the top of the mountain, he caught up with me and threatened me. I handed over the Dharma robe, but he was not willing to take it. He said, quote unquote, "I have come this long distance just to seek the Dharma. I have no need for the robe." End quote within quotes. Then, on top of the mountain, I transmitted the Dharma to Hui Ming, who, when he heard it, was at once enlightened. I then ordered him to return to the north and to convert people there. I was predestined to come to live here and to preach to you officials, monks, and laymen. My teaching has been handed down from the sages of the past. It is not my own personal knowledge. If you wish to hear the teachings of the sages of the past, each of you must quiet his mind and hear me to the end. Please cast aside your own delusions. Then you will be no different from the sages of the past. Parentheses, what follows is the Dharma, end parentheses. The master Hui Neng called, saying, quote within quotes, I guess, "Good friends, enlightenment, and intuitive wisdom." So enlightenment, bodhi, and intuitive wisdom, prana, or pranya, are from the outset possessed by men of this world themselves. It is just because the mind is deluded that men cannot attain awakening to themselves. They must seek a good teacher to show them how to see into their own natures. Good friends, if you meet awakening, Buddha wisdom will be achieved. Good friends, my teaching of the Dharma takes meditation and wisdom as its basis. Never, under any circumstances, say mistakenly that meditation and wisdom are different. They are a unity, not two things. Meditation itself is the substance of wisdom. Wisdom itself is the function of meditation. At the very moment when there is wisdom, then meditation exists in wisdom. At the very moment when there is meditation, then wisdom exists in meditation. Good friends, this means that meditation and wisdom are alike. Students, be careful not to say that meditation gives rise to wisdom, or that wisdom gives rise to meditation, or that meditation and wisdom are different from each other. To hold this view implies that things have duality. If good is spoken while the mind is not good, meditation and wisdom will not be alike. If mind and speech are both good, then the internal and the external are the same, and meditation and wisdom are alike. The practice of self-awakening does not lie in verbal arguments. If you argue which comes first, meditation or wisdom, you are deluded people. You won't be able to settle the argument and instead will cling to objective things and will never escape from the four states of phenomena. That's 14. He's still talking. Still in quotes. The samadhi of oneness is straightforward mind at all times, walking, staying, sitting, and lying, like lying down. The Ching Ming Ching says, quote within quotes, straightforward mind is the place of practice. Straightforward mind is the pure land, end quote within quotes. Do not with a dishonest mind speak of the straightforwardness of the Dharma. If, while speaking of the samadhi of oneness, you fail to practice straightforward mind, you will not be disciples of the Buddha. Only practicing straightforward mind, and in all things having no attachments whatsoever, is called the samadhi of oneness. The deluded man clings to the characteristics of things, adheres to the samadhi of oneness, thinks that straightforward mind is sitting without moving and casting aside delusions without letting things arise in the mind. This he considers to be the samadhi of oneness. This kind of practice is the same as insentiency. Oh, there's a footnote. Being like trees, rocks, etc. Oh, insentient. Got it. And the cause of an obstruction to the Tao. Tao must be something that circulates freely. Why should he impede it? If the mind does not abide in things the Tao circulates freely, if the mind abides in things, it becomes entangled. If sitting in meditation without moving is good, why did Vimalakirti scold Shariputra for sitting in meditation in the forest? Good friends, some people teach men to sit viewing the mind and viewing purity, not moving and not activating the mind, and to this they devote their efforts. deluded people do not realize that this is wrong, cling to this doctrine, and become confused. There are many such people. Those who instruct in this way are, from the outset, greatly mistaken. 15. Good friends, how then are meditation and wisdom alike? They are like the lamp and the light it gives forth. If there is a lamp, there is light. If there is no lamp, there is no light. The lamp is the substance of light. The light is the function of the lamp. Thus, although they have two names, in substance they are not two. Meditation and wisdom are also like this. 16. Good friends, in the Dharma there is no sudden or gradual, but among people some are keen and others dull. The deluded recommend the gradual method. The enlightened practice the sudden teaching. To understand the original mind of yourself is to see into your own original nature. Once enlightened, there is, from the outset, no distinction between these two methods. Those who are not enlightened will, for long kalpas, be caught in the cycle of transmigration. 17. Good friends, in this teaching of mine, from ancient times up to the present, all have set up no thought as the main doctrine, non-form as the substance, and non-abiding as the basis. Non-form is to be separated from form even when associated with form. Non-thought is not to think even when involved in thought. Non-abiding is the original nature of man. Successive thoughts do not stop. Prior thoughts, present thoughts, and future thoughts follow one another, the other without cessation. If one instant of thought is cut off, the Dharma body separates from the physical body, and in the midst of successive thoughts there will be no place for attachment to anything. If one instant of thought clings, then successive thoughts cling. This is known as being fettered. If in all things successive thoughts do not cling, then you are unfettered. Therefore, non-abiding is made the basis. Good friends, being outwardly separated from all forms, this is non-form. When you are separated from form, the substance of your nature is pure. Therefore, non-form is made the substance. To be unstained in all environments is called no thought. If on the basis of your own thoughts you separate from environment, then in regard to things, thoughts are not produced. If you stop thinking of the myriad things and cast aside all thoughts, as soon as one instant of thought is cut off, you will be reborn in another realm. Students, take care. Don't rest in objective things and the subjective mind. If you do so, it will be bad enough that you yourself are in error, Yet how much worse that you encourage others in their mistakes. The deluded man, however, does not himself see and slanders the teachings of the sutras. Therefore, no thought is established as a doctrine, because man in his delusion has no thoughts in relation to his environment. Heterodox ideas stemming from these thoughts arise, and passions and false views are produced from them. Editor Edward, what are heterodox ideas? Heterodox means differing from accepted or established beliefs, standards, or doctrines, particularly in religion or philosophy. It's often used to describe opinions or ideas that are unorthodox or unconventional. The term is the opposite of orthodox, which refers to accepted or traditional beliefs. Now, since I'm used to hearing the term orthodox in the context of Christianity in particular, it made me think, heterodox, what's the difference between that and heretical? So I asked the Google AI bot, and it says here, while both heterodoxy and heresy involve deviations from accepted beliefs, heresy typically implies a more serious and intentional departure from established doctrine, often with a rejection of authority, while heterodoxy is a broader term, encompassing any belief that differs from the orthodox view, even if not as extreme. So I think here, what happened is, in the context of Christianity, or in particular, Orthodox Christianity, i.e. Catholicism, mostly, to deviate a little is to deviate a lot. And so I am not familiar with heterodoxy, because they jump straight from, if it's not orthodox, it's heresy. But in Buddhism, perhaps there's a gray area in between. You don't hear the term heresy come up too often. Thank you, Editor Edward. Therefore, this teaching has established no thought as a doctrine. Men of the world, separate yourselves from views. Do not activate thought. If there were no thinking, then no thought would have no place to exist. No is the no of what? Thought means thinking of what? No is the separation from the dualism that produces the passions. Thought means thinking of the original nature of true reality. True reality is the substance of thoughts. Thoughts are the function of true reality. If you give rise to thoughts from your self-nature, then, although you see, hear, perceive, and know, you are not stained by the manifold environments and are always free. The Vimalakirti Sutra says, quote within quotes, externally, while distinguishing well all the forms of the various dharmas, internally he stands firm within the first principle, end quote within quotes. 18. Good friends, in this teaching from the outset, sitting in meditation does not concern the mind, nor does it concern purity. We do not talk of steadfastness. If someone speaks of viewing the mind, then I would say that the mind is of itself delusion. And as delusions are just like fantasies, there is nothing to be seen. If someone speaks of viewing purity, then I would say that man's nature is of itself pure, but because of false thoughts, true reality is obscured. If you exclude delusions, then the original nature reveals its purity. If you activate your mind to view purity without realizing that your own nature is originally pure, delusions of purity will be produced. Since this delusion has no place to exist, then you know that whatever you see is nothing but delusion. Purity has no form, but nonetheless, some people try to postulate the form of purity and consider this to be Chan practice. People who hold this view obstruct their own original natures and end up being bound by purity. One who practices steadfastness does not see the faults of people everywhere. This is the steadfastness of self-nature. The deluded man, however, even if he doesn't move his own body, will talk of the good and bad of others the moment he opens his mouth, and thus behave in opposition to the Tao. Therefore, both viewing the mind and viewing purity will cause an obstruction to Tao. 19. Now that we know that this is so, what is it in this teaching that we call sitting in meditation? In this teaching, sitting means without any obstruction anywhere, outwardly and under all circumstances, not to activate thoughts. Meditation is internally to see the original nature and not become confused. And what do we call Chan meditation? In parentheses, Chan Ting. I was wondering, because Chan means meditation, so Ting they're translating as meditation, Chan they're leaving as Chan. Outwardly, to exclude form is Chan. Inwardly, to be unconfused is meditation. Even though there is form on the outside, when internally the nature is not confused, then, from the outset, you are of yourself pure and of yourself in meditation. The very contact with circumstances itself causes confusion. Separation from form on the outside is Chan. That's the word that becomes Zen in Japanese. Being untouched on the inside is meditation, Ting. Being Chan externally and meditation internally, it is known as Chan meditation. The Vimalakirti Sutra says, quote within quotes, "At once, suddenly, you regain the original mind," end quote within quotes. The Pu Sa Che says, quote within quotes, "From the outset, your own nature is pure," end quote within quotes. Good friend, see for yourselves the purity of your own natures. Practice and accomplish for yourselves. Your own nature is Dharmakaya, and self-practice is the practice of Buddha. By self-accomplishment, you may achieve the Buddha way for yourselves. Good friends, you must all, with your own bodies, receive the precepts of formlessness and recite in unison what I am about to say. It will make you see the threefold body of the Buddha in your own selves. Quote within quotes. I take refuge in the pure Dharmakaya Buddha in my own physical body. I take refuge in the 10,000 hundred billion Nirmanakaya Buddhas in my own physical body. I take refuge in the future perfect Sambhogakaya Buddha in my own body. End quote within quotes. Recite the above three times. The physical body is your own home. You cannot speak of turning to it. The threefold body, which I just mentioned, is within your own self natures. Everyone in the world possesses it, but being deluded, he cannot see it and seeks the threefold body of the Tathagata on the outside. Thus he cannot find the threefold Buddha body in his own physical body. Good friends, listen. I shall make you see that there is a threefold Buddha body of your own self-natures in your own physical bodies. The threefold Buddha body is produced from your own natures. What is the pure Dharmakaya Buddha? Good friends, although the nature of people in this world is from the outset pure in itself, the 10,000 things are all within their own natures. If people think of all the evil things, then they will practice evil. If they think of all the good things, then they will practice good. Thus it is clear that in this way, all the dharmas are within your own natures. Yet your own natures are always pure. My understanding is when they say the 10,000 things, that basically means every thought, distraction, memory. When you look around, you see, you know, and when you look within your mind, you see the 10,000 things. So the number isn't necessarily exactly 10,000. It's just a lot of things. And of those 10,000 things, if you focus on the evil, you practice evil. If you focus on the good, you practice good. Is what I understand him to be saying. The sun and the moon are always bright. Yet, if they are covered by clouds, although above they are bright, below they are darkened. And the sun, moon, stars, and planets cannot be seen clearly. But if suddenly the wind of wisdom should blow and roll away the clouds and mists, all forms in the universe appear at once. The purity of the nature of man in this world is like the blue sky. Wisdom is like the sun. Knowledge like the moon. Although knowledge and wisdom are always clear, if you cling to external environments, the floating clouds of false thoughts will create a cover, and your own natures cannot become clear. Therefore, if you meet a good teacher, open up the true Dharma and waft aside your delusions and errors, inside and outside, will become clear. Within your own natures, the 10,000 things will all appear, for all things of themselves are within your own natures. Given a name, this is the pure Dharmakaya Buddha. Taking refuge in oneself is to cast aside all actions that are not good. This is known as taking refuge. What are the 10,000, 100 billion Nirmanakaya Buddhas? If you do not think, then your nature is empty. If you do think, then you yourself will change. If you think of evil things, then you will change and enter hell. If you think of good things, then you will change and enter heaven. If you think of harm, you will change and become a beast. If you think of compassion, you will change and become a bodhisattva. If you think of intuitive wisdom, you will change and enter the upper realms. If you think of ignorance, you will change and enter the lower quarters. The changes of your own natures are extreme. Yet the deluded person is not himself conscious of this. Successive thoughts give rise to evil, and evil ways are always practiced. That last line was added at one point in this translation. It was omitted in one translation, but okay. The part about successive thoughts give rise to evil and evil ways are always practiced. But if a single thought of good evolves, intuitive wisdom is born. This is called the Nirmanakaya Buddha of your own nature. What is the perfect Sambhogakaya Buddha? As one lamp serves to dispel 1,000 years of darkness, so one flash of wisdom destroys 10,000 years of ignorance. Do not think of the past. Always think of the future. If your future thoughts are always good, you may be called Sambhogakaya Buddha. An instant of thought of evil will result in the destruction of good, which has continued 1,000 years. An instant of thought of good compensates for 1,000 years of evil and destruction. If, from the timeless beginning, future thoughts have always been good, you may be called the Sambhogakaya Buddha. Observed from the standpoint of the Dharmakaya, this is none other than the Nirmanakaya. When successive thoughts are good, then this is the Sambhogakaya. Self-awakening and self-practice, this is to take refuge. Skin and flesh form the physical body. The physical body is the home. This has nothing to do with taking refuge. If, however, you awaken to the threefold body, then you have understood the cardinal meaning. To be honest, I feel I am a long way from understanding what they mean by Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya. Editor Edward, could you give whatever definitions there are from Google of these three words to help us understand? Basically, it's a Mahayana thing. The Trikaya, meaning three bodies, is a fundamental Buddhist doctrine that explains the multidimensional nature of Buddhahood. As such, the Trikaya is the basic theory of Mahayana Buddhist theology of Buddhahood. Who knew? Dharmakaya is one of the three bodies. The Dharmakaya constitutes the unmanifested, inconceivable...
Inconceivable!
Thank you, what's his name from Princess Bride? Not important. Aspect of a Buddha out of which Buddhas arise and to which they return after their dissolution. When a Buddha manifests out of the Dharmakaya in a physical body of flesh and blood, which is perceptible to ordinary sentient beings, this is called Nirmanakaya, the transformation body. So that was the second one. So Dharmakaya is truth body or reality body. Nirmanakaya is transformation body. It is the third aspect of the Trikaya and the physical manifestation of a Buddha in time and space. As an asterisk, put an asterisk next to that, in Vajrayana it is described as the dimension of ceaseless manifestation. But as far as Chan, we can forget about that since Chan came from Mahayana, not related to Vajrayana. So, okay. Then the Sambhogakaya is the second of the three aspects of a Buddha. Sambhogakaya is a subtle body of limitless form. Buddhas such as Vaisajyaguru and Amitabha, as well as advanced bodhisattvas such as Avalokiteshvara and Manjushri, can appear in an enjoyment body. A Buddha can appear in an enjoyment body to teach bodhisattvas through visionary experiences. Okay, so the short answer is Dharmakaya is truth body or reality body, and it's the first one. Sambhogakaya is enjoyment body, and Nirmanakaya is transformation body. And Dharmakaya is unmanifested and inconceivable, and when it manifests so that ordinary beings can view it, it's the third one. And the middle one is the one that bodhisattvas, high elevated beings, not ordinary beings, can see, that can teach them as they're on their way. Thank you, Editor Edward. Okay, now we're one step closer. I found it interesting. I mean, I'm sure I'm not understanding, but one thought of evil can destroy thousands of years of good. One thought of good can destroy thousands of years of evil. Makes me raise an eyebrow. But again, I'm not closed to the words. I'm just raising an eyebrow. And again, there must be a level on which, perhaps there must be a level on which that makes sense. On the surface, it doesn't. But it's okay. I really like a lot of the turns of phrase here. Editor Edward, could you give an example of the turns of phrase that I loved? If you stop thinking of the myriad things and cast aside all thoughts, as soon as one instant of thought is cut off, you will be reborn in another realm. And one more. As one lamp serves to dispel a thousand years of darkness, so one flash of wisdom destroys 10,000 years of ignorance. All right. Editor Edward helping out more than usual today on Buddhist Books Podcast. All right, well, there it is. Moved forward a little bit with that. I also found it interesting because I had heard previously, I don't think the word Tao as like itself comes up in Shobogenzo, unless I'm mistaken. I've read Shobogenzo before and I don't remember it coming up. That's the teachings of Dogen in Japan, 600 years or so, however long after this. But I had heard from Alan Watts, I admit, that Zen was basically, a fusion of Mahayana Buddhism with Taoism. I mean, maybe that's an oversimplified way of putting it. But this is the first time I've seen the word Tao, the concept of Tao, mentioned so many times in a Buddhist scripture, or at all in a Buddhist scripture. So that's very interesting to observe that and have that confirmed, that yes, there is a lot of Tao in Zen, in as much as this is specifically a Zen text or a Chan text. So those are my thoughts that I remember having from while I was reading. On another podcast, I'm reading Tao Te Ching right now. We're up to chapter 32. If you'd like, here's the playlist for the Tao Te Ching, if you would like to get an idea of what it is that has come to influence Mahayana toward the development of Zen, if that's something you're interested in. So again, just to reiterate something I've tried to explain many times. I mean, this is, again, episode 282, so even if I've tried to explain it 5 or 6 times, that'll get lost in the shuffle, and I wouldn't expect anybody who happens to be watching this to be familiar with where I'm coming from. I have a particular emphasis on pre-sectarian early Buddhism in the present moment of my personal journey, and let's bring the clock back. So if you notice the most of the numbers, the 1, 3, 4, 6, 7, and 9 are all the wheel. So of these six, only 5 of them are on here. Those are the pre-sectarian early, or 4 of them. Pre-sectarian early Buddhism is there. Vajrayana Zen, I mean Vajrayana, the Tibetan form, is there at the top, the 0 on the clock, whereas Shingon, the Japanese form of Vajrayana, is there at the 5, and then Zen, you notice there's the green book for the 8, and the this book for the 2. So that's our schedule, and that's how I've organized my current focus. So I have one eye on Zen, one eye on Vajrayana, but those aren't the main eye. The main eye is on pre-sectarian early Buddhism, but also with a lesser eye on the Zen form, the Zen development upon Mahayana, and the Vajrayana development upon Mahayana. And within that smaller Zen eye, one eye is on the 13th century Japanese form, and one eye is on the 7th-ish century Chinese form. And within the smaller Vajrayana eye, one eye is on the Tibetan form. Currently reading a poetic life story of Padmasambhava, which is very specifically Tibetan, whereas the other eye is on a text, kind of a textbook about Shingon Buddhism, to see the similarities and the differences between those two, to see the similarities and the differences between these two, while at the same time observing all of those, but grounded in pre-sectarian early Buddhism. That's not something I'm prescribing for you. That's just my personal journey, and hence it's the schedule of Buddhist Books Podcast. I hope that makes sense. Sometimes people post in the comments advising, don't read Shingon, read Tibetan Buddhism. Don't read this, read that. Or you shouldn't look at this that way, you should look at it that way. And it's, so I try to explain in the comments. So I thought that maybe by explaining here briefly at the end of this episode, maybe it would help to clarify for some folks what we're doing here on Buddhist Books Podcast. Okay. So next time we'll be back to reading the Tipitaka, Pre-Sectarian Early Buddhism, and I hope that you enjoyed today's reading, and I hope that my, you know, diluted clouds of attachment and dualism and thinking there at the end didn't wash away the clarity and the wisdom that was brought by the text. So, okay. I'll go ahead and do the usual closing, and I'll see you next time. To the north and to the south, to the east and to the west, to the spirits of light among us and to the spirits below, we send out our reverent love and compassion. May all beings be happy. May all beings be serene. May all beings be in peace. Until next time.